You're listening to the Strongpreneur Podcast, where we're waging war on mediocrity. Live your strong life and build your strong business with me, Tom Reber. Mediocrity dies today.
Hey, thank you for joining us today on the Strongpreneur Podcast. My name is Tom Reber from Motorhard.com, and we're all about waging war on mediocrity in your life and your business, and I can't think of too many people more qualified than that than my guest today, Marcus Sheridan. How you doing, buddy?
Yo, Tom, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to be here, and hopefully we'll say something today that adds some value to the life of your listeners. But thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. And I want to share with people, just in case they're not familiar with your story and stuff like that, a little bit of your bio, if that's cool.
Sure, whatever, man.
All right. So, and jump in anytime you want here, but in 2001, fresh out of college, Marcus Sheridan stumbled across his first business with two friends and began installing swimming pools out of the back of a beat-up pickup truck. 9 years later, and with the help of incredible innovations through inbound and content marketing, his company overcame the collapse of the housing market and became one of the largest pool installers in the United States, and currently has the most visited swimming pool website in the world, which is riverpoolsandspas.com. Now, with that success, in late 2009, Sheridan started his sales, marketing, and personal development blog called The Sales Lion. That's how I first found you. And has since grown the Sales Lion brand to be synonymous with inbound and content marketing excellence. He's been featured in multiple industry publications, including the New York Times, where he was referred to as a web marketing guru. Today, when he is not giving riveting and passion-filled keynotes around the globe or consulting with businesses and brands, he generally finds himself on an adventure with his wife and four children. Did I miss anything, man?
That's it, bro. That's it. My life right there in a nutshell.
So tell me about that beat-up pickup truck.
Well, you know, nobody ever grows up saying, I want to be a pool guy, right? Uh-huh. And I think the stat right now is within 4 years after graduating college, 75% of the country is not in the field that they studied, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, I was working after college at this one company and didn't like it. Didn't feel good about it, so I came back home temporarily, trying to figure out what exactly I wanted to do, where I needed to go next. And my two buddies had just started this company. They said, "Hey, could you run our little retail store while we're out putting pools in the ground?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll give it a go until I find something else that I like." And 6 months into it, they said, "Hey, why don't you join the team? You'll be the third partner." And the rest, as they say, is history. And, you know, Tom, we went through some incredible times, right? We tried to, like every business, grow the business and spend tons of time and effort dealing with that. And we experienced the roller coaster of all those things. And then, you know, the market collapsed in 2008, and that was a terrible time for swimming pool companies throughout the country because nobody had any disposable income, and if they did, it was hard to even get a loan for a swimming pool. So it was a terrible time for us. I remember. And when the market crashed, the day after the market crashed in 2008, September of 2008, we had five people that had deposits on in-ground pools, withdrew their deposits and said, "Hey, we can't get a swimming pool from you all." And so that was $250,000 in business within 48 hours. And they just didn't have the confidence, right? And things got worse and worse. By January of 2009, I was three weeks overdrawn on our business account. 16 employees sitting at home. I thought we were going to lose everything. That's when I really started to say, okay, if we don't do something drastic and we do it now, we're going to lose the business. I'm going to lose my home, etc. And that's when I started reading about the internet. And everything I read, Tom, was pretty technical, but my mind doesn't work really in a technical light, right? Mm-hmm. So the way I saw it was, okay, so what you're telling me is if I'm a better teacher than anybody else, if I hear the questions like they're asking it about fiberglass swimming pools, and if I'm willing to address every single one of those questions individually on my website in what would turn out to be blog articles, we're going to be successful. So that's exactly what I did. And I started addressing each one of those questions, good, bad, and ugly, Tom, which is the big key. And today, Riverpools really is the Wikipedia of fiberglass swimming pools, and it's amazing. And like you said, it gets we get about 350,000 visitors a month. It saved the business, and now we're becoming a manufacturer of fiberglass pools as well. Now, the thing about this is, though, Tom, the immediate reaction of some of your listeners as well, you know, that's a B2C company, and we're different, because everybody likes to think that they're different. It doesn't matter what they do. And I'm here to say that these principles, which is the principle I call it, is they ask, you answer. And that is, if anyone has ever asked you a question, it's your moral obligation to address it, to put your stake in the ground and say how you feel about it, your company, you individually, or your company as a whole, as a collective. You do it online, you do it on your website, and you don't have hesitation to do so. And if you do that, you'll become a thought leader, but you have to do it honestly, you have to do it transparently, and you have to do it more prolifically than anybody else in your space. Not always easy, but daggone it, it's possible for every single one of us.
I started reading your stuff on the Sales Lion probably right around the time you started. And I remember a buddy of mine, David Chisholm. He was also in the painting industry.
Yep.
I was a painting contractor for a number of years. He's like, hey, this guy's got some pretty cool stuff. You should check it out. And so I started listening or reading your stuff, and I'd see you speak in a video here and there that somebody was holding with a flip phone or something at an event you were doing. And I remember hearing all that, and we were going through, you know, something similar at the same time. Now, I didn't have, you know, big swimming pool deposits being taken back, but, you know, our revenue was cut almost in half with my painting company years ago. And dude, I just copied what you were saying. I just copied what you did. And started answering questions, and I didn't do it very consistently. I started blogging, and what's funny is when the I guess the scales fell from my eyes and I could see clearly, if you want to put it that way, is I remember knocking on this guy's door, and I said, how'd you hear about us? And he says, well, that's a funny story. He says, about a year ago I was removing wallpaper in my kid's bedroom, and I was having a really hard time with it, so I went and asked Google how to remove wallpaper. And some article you wrote was there, and I followed what it said, and it worked. And I said, well, that's awesome. You know, that was like a year before. And I said, he says, but then, he says, he's a real do-it-yourselfer. He says, then about 4 months ago, my kid opened the door really hard and put the doorknob through the wall. And he says, I suck at drywall repair, so I'm going to go back to Google. And he asked Google how to repair drywall. And he says, another article that you wrote came up. He says, well, about a week ago, it was either him or his wife just found out they were getting transferred. And he says, we got this huge house. I'm normally a do-it-yourselfer. We got to get this thing ready to put it on the market. And I just figured every time I went to Google, you were the one standing there, so you were the one to call.
It's beautiful.
And that's when I was like, we were only like writing one blog a month and it wasn't even good. And that's truly when I was like, all right, this is serious stuff. And so that whole they ask, you answer thing has been, you know, I might owe you royalties or something from clients I've picked up over the last few years as a coach, because honestly, dude, I'm just repeating what you've been saying for so many years, and I appreciate it.
Well, I think it's just a philosophy, right? And it's one where when I think about my what makes me tick, Tom, it's I'm obsessed with the way people think. And when I was a pool guy, I was obsessed with the questions that they were asking. And I was obsessed with giving answers in a way that they could understand them, in a way that the light bulb could come on. And then I applied those same principles to the marketing space. And then I applied it to the speaking space. It's like, you know, when I go out there and speak to an audience, and I've been fortunate enough to have a pretty decent amount of success in the speaking space coming from a pool industry, right? Where, you know, you don't hear about people going from pool guys to professional speakers, right? And so how does that happen? And I think one of the biggest keys for me is I've never gotten in front of a group of people, or I've never put my pen on a paper and said, I want to try to sound smart today. Let's see how many people I can impress today with this, right? That's never the goal, because I think we all have got this perfect little BS meter, especially when it comes to online or when we're sitting in an audience, we can gauge somebody's intentions. Is it all about them, or is it about me? It's about the listener, the searcher, the viewer. It's about them helping me out, just like you did with that guy and his drywall, right? And so that's been my obsession. I obsess over the questions they're asking. I obsess over listening better. I obsess over the way that I communicate in a way that they actually get it, they understand it, the light bulb comes on. I obsess about solving their problems. And it doesn't change regardless of the space. And this is the big, and I already said it once, I'm gonna say it again though, Tom, because you know, you've seen this, I've seen this. You go to a room full of, let's say, 100 businesses, right? And you say to everybody in that room, so by a show of hands, how many of you would consider yourselves to be in a very unique or different industry? Things just work differently in your industry. And of course, you know what percentage would raise their hand, 100%. Or let's say you took, let's say you used to be a painter. Let's say you took a painter and you took four painters. One was in California, one was in Colorado, one was in Tennessee, and one was in Virginia. And you got them together and you said, which one of you four is in the most difficult area to have a painting business? Mm-hmm. Of course, every single person in the room is going to raise their hand. Why is that? We're obsessed with this idea that we're different, unique, and special. That's how it works. And the moment we let go of that, and we say, you know what? I play under the same rules as everybody else. And ultimately, what business is about, what life is about, is we're in a battle for trust. Who can engender more trust than anyone else? Your podcast is about engendering more trust so that people keep listening. So is my podcast. So is my blog. So is your blog. This is what we talk about. Your coaching is about, can they trust you more as a coach than other people to guide them in the right direction? We are in a battle for trust. And if we can win that battle, we're going to be very successful financially, emotionally, spiritually. There's a very good chance we're going to be very, very successful.
I love that. I love the, you know, you brought up trust, and so many people, you know, you've heard it before. Experts are the ones that people trust. That's why every time there's a tragedy in the nation, they look for an expert. And that expert they bring on TV. And
yeah, with the white coat on, right?
With the white coat and all this other stuff. But and a lot of times it's not even the guy who knows the most. It's just the one who's been, you know, he might be writing a column or he might be doing some sort of podcast, whatever. And so now he's an expert.
But okay, so let's look at that for a second. There's a big difference between somebody gets invited to be on TV one time and the one that keeps coming back over and over again. Mm-hmm. And there's one great separator, and it's not how smart they are. It's the ability for the other person that's watching, the viewer, to nod in affirmation. Yep. That's correct. That's correct. And a lot of the ones that get interviewed, they don't have that ability. So the thing that makes, say, somebody like Gary Vaynerchuk successful is that people can quickly nod and say, oh, yeah, I totally get what he's saying. Gary's very, very good at that. He's very good at that, right? And so the ones that do that well, boy, they just, and you can tell, you see people on TV, online all the time that are trying to sound intelligent and look and appear impressive. And what happens is they end up looking stupid and they don't get invited back. They don't get the trust and they become an afterthought.
So, you know, you brought up Gary Vaynerchuk. That's how I felt when I first started reading your stuff. Like, you wrote and communicate in a way that, you know, the average contractor dude like me at the time can understand.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, if somebody asks you how much something costs, then write it. Answer the question and frickin' put it online, you moron. You know, I mean, that was like, and so what was funny about that is I did that, and what I noticed is nobody in our local area was answering that question. And you know, you'd type in how much does painting cost or whatever at the time, and I'd have Yahoo Answers, and you'd have all these other forums come up and HGTV, but not one contractor, not one business like mine in the area did it. And I was like, man, we're going after this. And I think within a couple months of just hitting it hard, I want to say we owned four or five of the top organic spots in Google for those search terms, which were ended up driving a lot of revenue to us over
the years. Well, I mean, you can't be the ostrich with your head in the sand, not with the searcher nor with the search engine. And you know, if you look at every adjustment or enhancement that Google has made over the last 3 years, it's because they're obsessed with giving you better answers that are more specific to your specific question. That's just how it works. You can embrace that, or you can fight it, but you never win if you fight it. You have to embrace the reality, right? And so if that is the case, how do you address the question in a way that doesn't put yourself in a corner? It's not hard to do. And I can tell you this too. Every single client I have, and these 65% are business to business, a lot of them, their average deal is, you know, because they're selling some complex service or whatever, their average deal is $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, right? And for every single client we have, the number one traffic lead and sales generating content that they have produced has to do with money. It has to do with cost, right? Let me just give you other examples of things that you should talk about, but most people don't. And you mentioned this well, because you said you have these third party sites that are giving opinions and answers, which is a tragedy, because what's happening right now is most businesses and industries have allowed third party sites to dictate their income, like an Angie's List, like a Yelp, like a Yahoo Answers, like forums, things like that. That's dumb. If you have the chance as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, to dictate your revenue, why would you not do that? Give you an example of what I'm talking about. Okay, if you go online right now and you search for best swimming pool builders, Richmond, Virginia, which is a very common phrase, or best in-ground pool builders, Richmond, Virginia, people in Richmond search that all the time. And no swimming pool company ever addressed that question. But of course, I addressed that question. In fact, I even listed competitors. And you would say, well, how in the world could you write an article listing your competitors as some of the best pool builders in Richmond, Virginia, Marcus? Number one, I ain't stupid. I recognize the fact that if you want to know who my competitors are, it's going to take you about 10 seconds to figure it out. Number two, I realize that tons of people every single year in the Richmond, Virginia area are searching that phrase. I'm going to be the guy that they read if I'm just willing to address the stinking question, right? Because it's all a battle of trust. Mm-hmm. And somebody reads that article like, my goodness, this guy is so honest, I should probably call him too. That's what happens over and over again, right? And so I show articles like that to businesses who are like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you mentioned your competitors on your site. Look, it's no long, this is the thing, Tom, and I can't stress this enough. Consumer ignorance is no longer a sales and marketing strategy.
Great point. Yep.
And it used to be we could say, we won't mention that. And if we don't, they'll never find out about that. They'll never find out about that option, about that competitor, about that methodology. Forget that, man. That is so 2000, right? Now it's 2015. They will find out everything. In fact, they'll find out the good, the bad, and the ugly. So you have a choice. Either you can address it, or you can allow somebody else to address it. But know this, somebody will. And whoever does, they're going to earn that trust. They're going to earn the phone call. They're going to earn that sales appointment. And ultimately, that's what generates revenue.
So if memory serves me right, you wrote a blog post a few years ago that's done exceptionally well, and you talked about all the problems with your own product.
Right. Perfect example of transparency.
Tell us about that.
One of the most successful articles I did with my swimming pool company was, what are the problems of the fiberglass pool? And today, if you go online and you research...
Now, hold on. I want to cut you off real quick. I want to clarify for everyone listening. Marcus only does fiberglass pools, right, Marcus?
That's correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
He only does fiberglass pools and writes a blog post or an article talking about the most common problems with fiberglass pools. All right.
Yes. Yes. And this is because, you know, for years someone would come to me and say, okay, Marcus, be honest. I've heard things. What are the drawbacks? What are the potential issues of getting a fiberglass pool? And businesses hate that question. But you see, once again, if you're depending on consumer ignorance to be your marketing strategy, you're going to hide from the question. You're going to be the ostrich. And instead, I said, I'm going to embrace this because, and when it comes to sales, marketing, great communication, and this is like life in general, The greatest way to resolve concerns is to address the thing before it ever becomes a concern in the first place. So if you're smart as a business, you're going to say something like, let's say you sell fiberglass swimming pools. You're going to come right out and say, you know what, a fiberglass swimming pool might not be for you. Okay, might not be a good fit. If you're looking for a pool that's longer than 40 feet, it's not a good fit for you. You should probably go concrete. If you're looking for a pool that's less than 16 feet wide, excuse me, more than 16 feet wide, you should probably go concrete. If you're looking for a pool that's deeper than 8 feet, you should probably go concrete. If you're looking for an incredibly customized shape that we do not offer, you should probably go concrete. You see, when you say all those things, Tom, all of a sudden the person's like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this company. They're the first one that's not BSing me, mm-hmm. that's shooting it straight. And that's what every single consumer wants. I wrote an article on my marketing site. I wrote an article about some of the different problems with HubSpot. And so today I get leads when people are researching some of the problems with HubSpot, right? And that's one of the main things that I offer. Again, you have to be willing to address the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'll stress it again. Search engines love this, and searchers love this, and this completely sets you apart from the competition.
Yeah, that's, you know, you brought up an article with your other company, The Sales Line. And you mind if we dig into that a bit? Talk about the sales line?
We can dig into anything. Let me say one other last point about this, and just getting down to psychology here. I love asking the question, what's more important in terms of psychology and the way consumers think? Is it more important that on your website you say what you are, or that you say what you're not? And of course, everybody, after they think about it for a second, they say, well, it's what you're not. And so then the question becomes, well, why is that? Well, there's a lot of different psychological reasons. Number one, because people don't do it. Number two, because the moment you tell me what you're not, that's the moment you disarm me and I take serious interest in you as a business and I start to qualify myself. You see, I don't want you to qualify me. I don't want you to tell me that I should use your product or service or company. I want to arrive at that conclusion myself. And it's amazing to me that everybody, once they think about this, Tom, they say, clearly you should talk about, it's more important they understand what you're not. But guess what percentage of companies and businesses say on their website, this is what we're not. This is who we're not a good fit for. One of the highest converting pages of the sales line is just that, a page that says what we're not a good fit for. And it's a very high converting page because people are like, I've had people tell me, you know, I was working with this huge agency. They gave me a quote. You gave me a quote. You're obviously a smaller outfit, Marcus, but I read this page that you wrote and I said, my goodness, this is who I want to work with. But nobody does it.
Why do you think that is? Why does such a small percentage of businesses take the time to create something like that?
Well, I think it's a scarce mentality, number one, Tom. You know, we come from this place where we think that we want every lead. Reality is, you know this, especially from your coaching, the happiest businesses, the happiest people are the ones that understand just as much what they are not as what they are. And they understand who they want to work with and who they do not want to work with. And it's clearly, clearly delineated, right? And so when businesses are having a bad experience, when they're frustrated, it's usually because they engage someone or a company that they knew was going to be a bad fit. Felt it early on in the process, but yet they gave in. And the only reason why we give in is because we have a scarce mentality and we're thinking about cash flow. And we take the cash and then we engage. And then we say, my goodness, this sucks. I hate my job. I hate this person. Why am I doing this? And that one person, even though they might be a small percentage of our client base, they ruin our whole day. And they oftentimes make us hate our job. That's why the happiest businesses clearly understand who they're a bad fit for. And they also understand that the power of content as a sales tool is profound, because great content should push someone down the sales funnel very fast, or it should push them completely out of the sales funnel very fast. You don't want vacillation. You don't want somebody just kind of hovering around the sales. No, in or out. And that's only achieved through incredible transparency and honesty.
Yeah, you know, if somebody hits your page and it shows that your widget costs, you know, starting at $5,000, you know, that's usually a pretty quick indicator for people, either this place is for me or it's not.
Tom, you know how many times I've heard Marcus, we've tried this whole internet thing, but our leads from our website are bad. Okay, leads are as good or as bad as the content that brought them there. Or in other words, the messaging that brought them there. If you're getting crappy leads, it means you have really crappy messaging because you're probably a crappy teacher. And I used to complain about my leads too. That's when I was resisting the reality of the fact that I was doing a very poor job explaining things. For example, I'd go on a sales appointment, and at the end, someone would say to me, "Oh, geez, I thought this was only going to be $15,000, and you're telling me it's $40,000? Oh my gosh, we don't have close to that much money. Oh no, we can't do this." No, I'd walk out of that saying, "That was the worst appointment of my life. I've wasted all this time. I can't believe that. Those people, they're so dumb," right? All these negative things that people say. And then once I actually became a mature person, I said, "Marcus, they're not the problem. You're the problem, brother, because you're a poor teacher. And until you start teaching better, communicating better, more cleanly, more concise, then of course you're going to get bad leads. You're going to have bad sales experiences. You know, life is about dances, right? You have the choice between good and bad dances." But my goodness, if you get in a bad dance, that can be a long song.
Well, what's great about what you just shared was that you personally took it upon yourself to create better opportunities for you and your business. You know, you didn't just sit there and whine and gripe and complain that the leads are bad, but you looked in the mirror, you said, "Okay, what are the things that I can control?" And I find that the strongest businesses, the strongest business leaders and the business owners really become their own turnaround expert. You know, looking in the mirror and saying, "Okay, let's just make a commitment to control everything we can control, and what happens from there happens from there."
Yeah. No doubt.
I can't imagine, you know, if I tallied up all the time I wasted going on, you know, sales calls I shouldn't have through the years, you know, how much of my life I would have had back, you know, then again, that's the education, right? So take me, talk to me a little bit about small businesses, and now that you're working a lot, doing a lot with the Sales Lion brand and helping people do the stuff we're talking about here. What do you see as some things that the strongest companies, the ones that are producing the strongest content, that they're getting the most results out of, what are a couple things that they're consistently doing?
Just a couple quick things here, okay? So number one, that they involve their employees, specifically their sales team, because the sales team is the one that's most in tune with what the prospect is saying and the major questions. Salespeople generally have some of the best answers, but yet marketing doesn't rely on sales. It's a big problem. Sales and marketing silos need to go the way the dodo bird. They need to merge. And that's why sales needs to get on the front end of the buying cycle. They need to be involved in textual content and video content on the front end, on the website. You know, it's a tragedy where I see so many salespeople that the prospect doesn't know what they look like. They don't know what they sound like. They don't know their philosophies until they're sitting across the table the first time. That's a problem. That should never, ever happen. Not in today's digital world. That's inexcusable, yet it happens all the time. That's number one. Number two, the companies focus on content that will bring results, all right? And I see this so much that they say, "Okay, we're blogging." They're feeling good about themselves. But they're blogging about stupid stuff. I mean, stuff that, okay, maybe I shouldn't call it stupid, Tom, but it's stuff that never in a million years is it going to be truly lead-generating content. Let me give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about. So I was meeting with an IT company last week, and what they do is they help do, you know, if somebody's trying to outsource their IT, they would assist them, okay? And so they had been, you know, producing content and blogging and whatnot for the past 6 months, but they are writing articles like this, you know, 6 ways to make your business run smoother. See, that's a dumb article.
Right.
Now, why is that a dumb article? It's a dumb article because it's not a buyer-based IT outsourcing question. It's just not. And it is a very, very, it's not even close to the funnel. I mean, if you got the funnel, it's like, It's like yards, miles away from that stinking funnel. And you don't want to be, that's a feel-good piece of content. That's all fine and dandy. It might do okay on social media. It's never going to get you a stinking lead. If it ain't going to get you a lead, if a prospect is not going to ask you that question, you probably shouldn't be talking about it, at least not at first. You got to prioritize. And you know, when we engage with a company, we always say, okay, what are the questions you get all the time? What are the subjects you feel like we should be addressing? And then we'll rate them, 1, 2, or 3. 3 being, this is significant, important. These people are asking this, especially when they're at the lower end of the funnel. And a 1 means, it's okay, but it's either top of funnel or not in the funnel. And we don't ever produce the 1s. We just don't. Right. We focus on the 3s and the 2s because we want to be addressing things. In other words, I give you 2 examples in the swimming pool space, right? How much does a fiberglass pool cost? That's a 1. Great article, right? Mm-hmm. Because that means that person is looking at a fiberglass pool. They're looking to buy a fiberglass pool. And if they're searching it, they're probably looking to buy within the next 6 months. Great. That's a 1. But if you say 5 things about a swimming pool you didn't know, say stupid.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. But you see that daggone article in every industry, 5 things about such and such you didn't know.
Yeah, and it's really about putting yourself in the shoes of your client and not thinking like the owner of the business that you own, right?
Yeah, when was the last time you went online and you said, 5 things I don't know about? You've never done that.
Never.
So why would you, as a teacher, as a content producer, why would you write that? Now, if you have this massive audience and you're the Huffington Post or whatever, okay, but that's a social game. That's a click-through game. This is a different game that the majority of business, especially small businesses, are playing.
I remember I was telling somebody a couple weeks ago that last year one of my kids got sick and middle of the night was laying on our couch, our leather couch, and threw up on it. And I went to Google at like 2 in the morning and I asked how to clean vomit off a leather couch. You know, I didn't search for best cleaning company. I didn't search clean. I searched for a specific problem that I was having, and not one company answered the question for me.
No, they don't think like you. They don't think like you. And, you know, it happens, believe it or not. It's a funny story, but it happens all the time. That's that exact thing. And there's so many other cases like that. And if a business is listening, if they're tuned in, they're going to be addressing that on their side. Mm-hmm.
So I know we talked a little bit about some of the challenges you had, the dark days of your pool company, people asking for money back and really on the verge of, I guess, going out of business. Pretty tough mental challenges back then, I imagine. How about with the sales line? What kind of challenges do you run into now? You know, you're out of the contracting world, at least a lot of the day-to-day. You've started this new career, this new brand over the last few years. What's been the most challenging about making that transition for you?
I think no matter what you're doing, you're going to find that you essentially experience the same challenges. How quickly do I scale? How do I balance my time? What is going to bring me the greatest return on my time's investment? What should I focus on with my business? Mm-hmm. And what is a distraction? How do I say no to the things that I should be saying no to and yes to what I should be saying yes to? How do I make sure that I get value for my services and proper compensation, right? And really, I asked every single one of those questions when I was a pool guy. Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed, even though now I'm in the B2B space. I'm dealing with, you know, multi-million dollar companies and all these things. It hasn't changed. It hasn't at all. I'm going through the same exact issues, just in a different space.
So you brought up prioritizing and your time and things like that. How are you approaching that now? How do you make those decisions of where your time goes?
Well, number one, I have employees that help a lot, okay, that are taking things off of my plate, which are allowing me to focus on that which I can make the greatest impact, right? And that's, man, how many of us get caught up in the minutia and we just get bogged down? And I'm not saying that I've cleared my plate from minutia yet, but I'm constantly in that process. And that to me is, that's been one of the greatest keys, Tom. But I'm still figuring it out, you know, and I'm still learning to say no at the right times, because when you're a good person and you're kind, you want to say yes to everybody, and you can't do it, especially in today's crazy busy world, right? We're not just sitting back and getting home at 5 o'clock and, you know, kicking our feet up and with all the kids on our lap anymore. That's not the way society is. And I love my kids sitting on my lap, but it's just not, it does. But you have to, if you don't really intentionally control your time and your schedule, things will hit the fan and it'll get away from you so very, very quickly. You have to be so careful.
Yeah, it's, you know, just being aware of what you do best and making sure that you're putting those things on the calendar first. What are the high impact things that I do in my own business that move it forward and make sure that that gets my best energy and focus instead of my scraps? And, you know, that's, you know, delegating, outsources, hiring a VA, whatever the heck you got to do that. But one of the things I like to ask people, and an example I use is, you know, we all have fears, things that we're afraid of. And I'm sure that you were, I know, you know, being a business owner, being a father, being, you know, who you are, there are certainly things that pop up that you just go, oh man, this ain't good. How do you, do you have an example of, maybe a recent example of how you've maybe gone toe to toe with something that, you know, was scary? like that word, scary. You know, back sitting, I read your story, I've heard your story many times. You're sitting at your kitchen table and your business is struggling and you're like, I'm going to be writing blogs. I'm going toe-to-toe with this thing. I'm going to turn my business around. You know, you walked into the punch and you addressed what needed to be done. You know, building this new brand, what are some things that you might have had to do the same with?
Well, I think that, you know, I guess for some it would be considered scary, is I went from being a pool guy to sitting in front of two people. Now it's not uncommon for me to stand in front of 2,000 people. And I'm getting paid to bring value. And what's interesting, Tom, is that I didn't really know what I was going to be when I started the sales line. I didn't know I was going to have what would be a marketing and sales consulting company. I didn't know that. I didn't know I was going to be speaking around the world. Didn't know that. But I did know that I felt like I had things that needed to be discussed and I needed to vet them out of my mind. I needed to distill my thoughts. I needed to put them down. And if I did, good things would happen. And I think the biggest problem that many people have is they say, I want to see the whole thing. I want to have a plan. I want to have all these goals. Mm-hmm. I want to write down where I'm going to be in a year and then in 2 years and 3 years. I want to know exactly what we are as a company, what our unique value proposition is, all these things. Man, you realize how impossible it is to define all those things. I'm telling you, you have got to walk the trail before you see where the thing actually goes. But yet most of us want to see the end of the trail first. Mm-hmm. We want to know, yeah, I'm clearly going to be speaking to people all over the world and getting paid well to do it. I didn't know that. I did not know that. I was willing, though, to start the process of walking and figure it out. And I'm still in that mode of figuring it out because, Tom, I don't think my end play is to talk about marketing. Now, that's what I'm talking about today. But I don't think that's what I'll be talking about in 10 years. But I know I need to talk about marketing today so as to figure out what I'm supposed to be talking about in 10 years. And I'm okay with that.
That's great. I mean, you know, one of the things you said that just really hit me was I didn't know what this thing was going to be when I started. And I felt the exact same way about my business now. And I don't know if you remember this, but you were you actually had a part in me selling my half of the business and moving on and starting this thing. I remember I was on my way to a speaking gig. I still was a part owner in my painting company. And you and I had like a 20-minute phone call. And I'm like, dude, you know, I wanted to talk to you because you're a contractor and I'm a contractor. And you just kind of get each other. And I remember, I don't remember exactly what you said, but you were like, dude, just go for it. You know, give it a shot. And it was at a time where I was really on the fence. And it was that conversation, along with a couple other things going on in my life, that really helped me to take that step. And I think what's been great about it is I just knew I needed to be true to myself and what I was feeling inside. That I was just due for a change. I didn't want to live some mediocre life. I didn't want to do something that I wasn't totally passionate about. And every now and then you just got to take a shot and go for it, even if you don't know how it's going to turn out. So, man, I wanted to just thank you for that conversation, but also to, you know, if anyone's listening to this that's on the fence about whether you need to, you know, quit a job or start something new or change direction, you don't, like Marcus said, you don't have to see the end here. You know, you just need to know that I got to take a step today and see what happens. Take a step tomorrow, see what happens.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, one thought that I think that I would want to close with is this, and that is the reason why I told you that, like I did, and I don't tell everybody that, is I could tell that you were a stallion and you were ready to run. And if a stallion ain't running, a stallion is dying, and a stallion certainly ain't happy in a pen. And the moment you become restless is the moment you got to make a serious choice, because restlessness with your job doesn't go away. It just doesn't dissipate. And so you have to address it somehow. Either you, within the same company, you reposition yourself, you redefine your roles, and you give yourself new challenges, or you move on. But you can't stay where you are, because otherwise you feel like you start to die, at least on the inside. And that's not a good feeling. And that's where people get depressed. That's where they get frustrated. And that's why they look in the mirror and they say, I am not happy where I am.
Great point. Couldn't end on a better note, man. Couldn't end on a better note. So, hey, first of all, I want to thank you for taking time to hang out with us today and share a bit of your story. I know we just scratched the surface, but Marcus, if somebody wants to connect with you, how do they do it? What's the best way?
You know, the best way to connect with me intimately is my podcast. It's Mad Marketing. You can find it, of course, anywhere, iTunes, Stitcher, etc. You can see me at thesaleslion.com. I'm at thesaleslion on Twitter. And my personal email is Marcus1@thesaleslion.com. Tom, it has been a tremendous pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Thank you too, Marcus. I appreciate it, and have an awesome day, man.
All right, buddy.
Hey, everybody, that's it for the Strongpreneur podcast today. Take what you heard today. Take one thing, apply it, wage your own war on mediocrity, build a strong life, build a strong business. We'll see you next time.